Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Okay, you all can be seated, then we can start our chanting. Yeah. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, turn to page 4.
Oh, now we will do the next one.
Okay, before we do the chanting, we must pay respect to Triple Gem. Then after that, we will chant the salutation. Namo Bunsu Si Jia Mo Ni Po. Namo Bunsu Si Jia Mo Ni Po. Namo Bunsu Si Jia Mo Ni Po. Namo Quan Su Yin Pu Sa. Namo Quan Su Yin Pu Sa. Namo Quan Su Yin Pu Sa. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Pho Pu Sa. Namo Pho Pu Sa. Namo Pho Pu Sa. Okay, we will pay respect to the Triple Gem. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Sanghang Namami. Okay, we can start our chanting now. Turn to page 4 of the chanting book. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. ปานาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปมาทาทานะเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิ Now we were chant the Padipa Puja offering of likes. Gandha sarappa dittena dittena tamadangsena tiloka dippang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang gandha sambarayutena dopenahang suganghinaPujayi pujani yang tang puja bajana muttamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kesuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe.Pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena mettena sahotu mokhang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata vinas inasa bhavang adivasetu no bante.Paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigang hatu mutamang. Okay, turn to page 18. You do the puja aspiration. We are understanding the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light.We shall make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind, to help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Understanding the significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool waterLead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and douses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Understanding the significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue and understanding fall far and wide. Just like the fragrance of this incense, we are offering to the Blessed One.Who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Offering of fruits. May these offerings of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruitions soon as possible. Offering of flowers.May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration.By the power of all these merits born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas. Sharing and transversal merits to all beings. May these merits be transferred to all beings without exception.Especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sa sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem. Butang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay. Thank you. You can be seated. Huh? So now we can start our meditation. Anybody who is totally new to the class? Oh, two of you. Huh? But you attended the Thursday class before. Yeah? Yeah? The Thursday class. It's Sunday. Sunday. More or less it's the same. Huh? So I will give you some short instruction. Yeah? I will off the light first. Today we can have half an hour of meditation because we stop or we finish our puja early. Okay, for those who already have the understanding of how to develop this meditation, you can start straight away. Then for those who are new, who need instruction, I will give you some simple short instruction. The rest you can read up the books. I think the two new ones, I have given you the blue book. You should read through the blue book and you will understand. So basically what we do during our meditation session is we are here to train our mind to be heedful, to be mindful. Heedfulness is very important according to the Buddha. To meditate, you must have this state of mind. He called it apamada in Pali. The English translation is to be mindful, to be heedful. So heedfulness is slightly more than mindfulness. To be heedful, you must be ever mindful. Then use that mind, which is ever mindful, to develop the meditation, to cultivate the wisdom. So this is what heedfulness is all about. For those who are new, I will brief you a little bit. The reason why human beings' mind is not peaceful is because of mental hindrance. According to the Buddha, these five mental hindrance, which you can find in the notes, they are the one that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner mindfulness, and inner awareness. So because of that, you need to develop clear understanding as to how to overcome them. The five hindrances are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or sleepiness of mind and lethargic mind. Fourth one is your mind become restless because you have problems. Problem can lead to fear, worry, anxiety, and this will make your mind restless. So restless is a very severe hindrance too. Then the last one is doubt. When you are not confident, you are not sure what is going on, you will have a lot of doubt. So this doubt is also a hindrance. So the Buddha said, if you don't train your mind to overcome all these hindrances, you are incapable of developing the understanding of his teaching. So the first thing that you must develop understanding is, in order to overcome the five mental hindrances, you don't have to fight them, control them, or suppress them, or do anything with them. You just acknowledge them, understand them for what they are, then cultivate the opposite five mental faculties, which will immediately help you overcome the five mental hindrances. The five mental faculties or spiritual faculties can allow you to understand spiritual things. They are Saddha, which is faith and confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Then Virya, which is the spiritual zeal or tenacity to develop the understanding of his teaching. Then the third one is Sati, or mindfulness or heedfulness. Then the fourth spiritual faculty is Samadhi, which is the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. Then when you have Sati and Samadhi, your mind has clarity. It will allow you to see things as they are clearly, to develop the wisdom, which is Panya, the last spiritual faculties. And all this can be developed through the puja. When you develop this puja offering or devotional practice, pre and post puja, it will help you understand who the Buddha is and how wonderful his teaching is. That's how you develop your strong faith and confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. Then when you understand him for what he is and how beautiful the teaching is, it will drive you to develop the spiritual faculty of Virya. With Virya, you will strive on with heedfulness to cultivate Sati. So our meditation here is to train our mind to develop Sati, mindfulness. After you have developed this training of the mind to be ever mindful, then use it to meditate. That is the purpose. So now I'll give you some simple instruction how to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful. First, in order to decondition your heedless thinking so that you are no longer heedlessly disturbed by the five hindrances, I will teach you the mind sweeping method. This mind sweeping method is very useful. It trains your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it will be at the forehead. Then you just feel. You don't think anymore. This training is very useful. So you make sure you have a stable sitting posture. Relax body and mind. Then check your backbone. Make sure it's straight. Then just breathe in, breathe out normally. Then relax every part of your body and mind. Feel it soothingly relax. Then close your eye. Maintain attention or awareness on your forehead. Just feel, don't think, feel. If you can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just silently relax, relax and relax them all. Whatever tension, whatever stress within, you just relax them all. Then you can move this attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel. Don't think, just feel. Every muscle and every strand within your ciliary muscle of your eye. Feel it soothingly. Relax, relax and relax them all. Then you move your attention to your facial muscle. Do the same. Feel them. Soothingly relax. Then in order to assist you to relax, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. The moment you can smile, there is joy, there is happiness. That's how your mind becomes peaceful. That's how you will relax naturally. Then you can radiate this love and metta to yourself, so that you can also develop inner peace and inner well-being. You can read it as follows. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the entire well-being and happiness within your heart. Just feel. When you recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, you feel your body and mind, entire being. All of the cells within your body. Be well and happy. Well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness deep within your body and mind. Your entire being. then you can continue by radiating may this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger, may it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the hearts. Then may all my loved ones, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all Kayanamitas within this vicinity, co-meditator and cultivator, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful always. May their mind states too be free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all unwholesome state of mind. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can read it to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity of SS2, Subangjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Mother Earth, then our solar system, then the entire galaxy, the Milky Way, and the whole universe. May all beings within the entire existence, known and unknown, seen and unseen, may they all too be well and happy. May their mind states too be free from all harm and danger, free from all negativity. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they also be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can come back to your facial muscle. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful than you feel. If there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you relax them all. Feel them soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your neck, shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, then neck. Then you move your attention down to your heart area. Again, you feel relax every part. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat. You just silence your mind and stay there. Be with it. Don't think. Don't try to know. Just stay there, silent. If you are new and you are not sensitive, then never mind. Just feel, like you feel your forehead. You feel your heart area. Relax into it, every part of it. Then you move this awareness or attention down to your stomach. Feel, relax. Abdomen, do the same. Feel, relax. Then your leg, feel, relax. Buttock, feel and relax. Then you can reverse this whole mind sweeping method. From your leg to your buttock, you feel and relax. Then move it to your abdomen, silent, feel, relax. Stomach, do the same, feel, relax. Then your heart area, chest, again you silent, feel and relax every part. Then after that you can move on. You move on to your shoulder. From your shoulder you move on to your neck and hand and back to shoulder, feel and relax. Don't think. Then you feel your facial muscle, do the same, relax every part. Then you move it to your eye muscle, forehead, feel, relax. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Your mind should be already quite mindful, silent. And now you need to stabilize this mind state, which is the silent mind. You can use a skillful means, which the Buddha recommended, which is anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. You just have to silence your mind, then feel your breathing, maintain attention in front of your nostril. Then breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Means the moment you can detect your breathing, the mind and the breath move as one without thought. And that is what anapanasati is all about. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So when you can be with the breathing, when you are mindful of your breathing in and out breath, you are developing anapanasati. So the basic training is very simple. Feel in front of your nostril. The moment you detect your breathing, you just follow mind and breath move as one. Initially, when you are not used to it, you expect this mind to wander off very fast. Split second is gone. No longer aware of the breathing, lost in thought. But don't worry, as long as you are patient, bring the attention back to the nostril and do it all over again, feel. Then the moment you detect, follow the breathing. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Then within a short moment, you should be able to develop this training. Then when anapanasati settles in or develops, your mind becomes very peaceful, very quiet, just aware of the breathing without thought. And that mind is a very beautiful mind. It will lead to the experiencing of what they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual rapture or spiritual joy that will arise from a mind that is trained in sati. A mind that is just mindful of the object of meditation. Then when sati arises, you continue to relax into it. Be with it, at peace with it, and silent, relax. Then after that, piti will transform into sukha. Sukha is a spiritual bliss, a very blissful state of mind. And you will like to meditate when sukha arises. Then you continue to relax and silent. This sukha will become more and more refined until it realizes a state of pasati. Pasati is the tranquil state of mind, the silent mind or the meditative mind. The mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, very still, no movement, like no thought, no movement. And that is the ultimate training that you need to do. When your mind can reach this state of pasati or tranquility and stillness, where there is no movement and no thought, and that is the mind that you need to develop. So when that happens, you just silence everything and relax and just stay with the breathing. Then your breath will become more and more subtle until there is like little or no breath. Don't worry, don't panic, just stay with it, silence everything. Then during that time, if the breathing becomes very subtle, then you can locate your mind anywhere. It will be very sensitive. It can feel many, many things. Wherever you locate your mind, it will be very sensitive. Like you locate at the forehead, you can feel many things in your forehead. Then you locate at the breathing, even the subtle breath will come back to you. Then you locate at your heart area. You just allow the awareness to drop to your heart area. Then you just feel silent. You will detect many things. Your heartbeat, all the vibration around there. You just relax and silent everything. Then you see what happened. That silent mind, which is pasati, is the meditative mind that is already in sati. And that is the mind that you need to stabilize. So you continue to relax and silent. You will develop the understanding of many things that is going on within your forming mind. Whatever that arises upon contact of mind with your respective sense organ, physical and mental, this silent mind will come to understand. So meditation is to develop this training. Now I will leave it to you to train your mind. And for those who really know how to meditate, you just silent, relax, and just away. Then you will develop the meditation accordingly. Yeah. Okay, I will ring the bell after about 15 minutes time. Okay, for those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those that are not, slowly, mindfully, come out meditation. So always remember, the purpose of here is to train your mind to develop the sati leading to the heedfulness. Then after you have trained, you just use it to meditate. Then move this mind state that is trained to do your daily activity to cultivate daily mindfulness. And that is the ultimate meditation. So the real meditation is daily mindfulness. Formal meditation is more towards training of the mind. Then later on, when you are very good, when your meditation has progressed very well, then you can go into any formal posture to do the actual formal meditation. By then you will come to understand the best posture is the lying down posture. But if you like sitting, you can sit, no problem. Okay, now we will continue with the invocation of the devas. Turn to page 6. I will read to you all the English translation. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. I will now chant the Pali. Samantha Chakavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadaman Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkalang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavatoi Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditatbo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyaya Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yokani Ata Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sango Ahuneyo Bahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, we pay respect to Triple Gem. Betang Pujami. Damang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay, good. Just relax yourself. Maintain some of our attention, then we can start off with our continuation of the Diamond Sutta. You turn to that page. We are at page 33. Yeah, I know. Opening verse. We have to read the opening verse. Turn to page, the page before page 1. We will recite together, verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, turn to page 33. Before I forget, Hailing, your passport is with N. Oh, you got it already. I pass it to her. You can get it from her. Then for those who are in Klang, this Friday, there is a talk at your NBC Center. The title, I think, Brother Gan just gave to me. They suggested this title, Urgency of Cultivation. Then the importance of action and developing the passion to develop this cultivation. Action, passion, and diligence, if I'm not wrong. So this one is a topic that they requested. So I believe this is what they want to develop the understanding, because now more and more Kayanamita start to see the urgency of cultivation. So strive on with heedfulness, do not be complacent. And to do that, you must see the urgency in cultivating this important understanding. That's why if you understand the opening verse, you will know why you need to develop the urgency. Because this window, like I always said, is very rare. Now that you are born as a human being, encounter the Buddha Dhamma and has the ability and condition to develop the understanding, the last effort is just develop the faith, the sincerity, and persevere, then you will develop it, you are home. So do not allow this to slip away, because this window, once it's gone, like the opening verse, you may have to wait a very, very long time to have a similar condition like what you have today. Okay, page 33, Subhati's request. Now we are officially going into the Diamond Sutta. So this is chapter 2, huh? Chapter 1 is mainly the introduction and all the background things. Subhati's request. Subhati is one of the top 10 disciples of Sakyamuni Buddha. So he was the disciple that made the request on behalf of the assembly. So according to the sutta I read to you now, at that time the elder Subhati arose from his seat in the assembly, uncovered his right shoulder, placed his right knee on the ground, put his palms together with respect and said to the Buddha. So according to commentary, this is Jianhua's commentary. After Sakyamuni Buddha had put away his robe and bath, washed his face, arranged his seat, and sat down, the elder named Subhati stood up in the assembly. There are three kinds of elders. The first one is the elders in years. They call it the Theras. Theras are those monks who has been ordained for more than 20 years at least. They are called Theras. Then the other one is elders in the Dhamma, means the Dhamma nature elder. Then the last one is the elder in blessings and virtue. So these three are very special elders. They are called the elders within the community of monks. The elders in years must be old and have held the precept for a long time, as had Mahakasapa, the oldest and longest preceptor of those in Sakyamuni Buddha's Dhamma assembly. There are three grades of elders in years. Low rank, those who have held precept for at least 10 years. Oh, this is Mahayana. For Theravada is 20 years and above. Middle rank, those who have held precept for more than 20 years and above. Then the high rank are those who have held precepts for more than 30 years. So that is how they define the elders. Then the next one is the Dhamma nature elder. This one can be very young. Sometimes 7 years old also can. They are arahant already. But he must possess great wisdom and be able to lecture sutta and speak the Dhamma with sufficient ability to teach and transform living beings. This statue comes from his deep understanding of the Dhamma, his penetration of the wonderful principle, and his unobstructed eloquence. For example, the Buddha's disciple, Sariputta, mastered the entire Buddha Dharma in just 7 days and became an elder at the age of... At that time, he mounted the high seat and spoke Dhamma, totally confounding the best debater from the five parts of India. All they could do was prostrate themselves before the 8-year-old child and confess themselves defeated. Of all Sakyamuni Buddha's disciples, Sariputta was foremost in wisdom and had unobstructed eloquence. There are four kinds of unobstructed eloquence. One is of phrasing, the other one is on the principle, the third one is on the Dhamma, and the last one is delight in speech. Unobstructed eloquence of phrasing enable one to answer any question, however difficult, without perplexity. Unobstructed eloquence of principle is a necessary complement to that of phrasing, because along with having limitless power of debate, one must always speak in accordance with principle. Means this one, you must not deviate from the truth. Sometimes you're good at debate because you can twist and turn, like lawyers. They are very good in putting up the argument for you. Then third one is unobstructed eloquence of Dhamma, means that no matter what is said, one can encounter with a higher principle. There is a saying, everything is the way, left and right meet the source. Can you understand this one? Yeah? Everything is the way. This one by now you should be able to. Like left or right, up or down, you meet with the source. The source is the original nature. From there everything comes to be. So nothing is apart from the Tao. And yet, whatever that can be spoken, described, is never the Tao. And yet nothing is apart from the Tao. So this understanding is very unique. Then the next one is unobstructed, eloquent of delight in speaking, and able ones to obtain delight in speech samadhi. Then even if the audience is unwilling to listen, one's word flow like water and no one can resist the current. So this is supposed to be the fourth one. The elder in blessings and virtue must have the reward from having planted blessings and acted with virtuous conduct. So these are like people with very, very great blessings and merits. They have perfected it. Like all the Buddhas and great Bodhisattva, they are very, very blessed and they have great virtue. So blessings and virtue are something that you need to perfect to become Samasambuddha. So elder is a term of respect and definitely not a little title one assigns oneself, saying, I'm an elder. Everyone should call me elder. Subhati, the elder in the Vajra, Prajna Paramita or Dhamma assembly, was an elder in years, a Dhamma nature elder, and an elder in blessings and virtue. So he got all the three. That's why Subhati is Pujian Tan. You know what's the meaning, you know? Mkan Tan. He is a real elder who really have all this. Elder in years, elder with Dhamma nature, and elder in blessings and virtue. So Subhati has three meaning. Empty bond. What is empty bond? I also don't know. Well manifest and good luck. Well manifest, you know, good luck. In Subhati's household, there were 108 storehouses filled with seven treasures. The seven precious gems of gold, silver, lapis, lazuli, crystal, then mother of pearl, ray pearl, and carnelian. When Subhati was born, it was found that the storehouse were entirely empty. Ah, no wonder born empty. One after another, the vaulted door were opened to reveal absolutely nothing within. Who has stolen my jewels? Cried Subhati's distraught father. We had such wealth and now we are penniless. What is the meaning of this son? He went to the diviner who calculated that the disappearance of the jewel and the birth of the child has been simultaneous. And so his father called the infant empty born. The moment he is born, the father lost everything. Analyzing the child's birth chart, the diviner declared, it very lucky, whereupon the child was further named good luck. Oh, see? Sometimes when you perceive something with initial negativity, it may not be so. It will turn out to be a blessing in disguise. Then 7 days after Subhati's birth, all of the family wealth reappeared. Oh. In the 108 storehouse that moved the father to rename the son. Well manifest. See? That's why he is very unique. Eh? Subhati grew up with Sakyamuni Buddha, was in the world teaching and transforming living beings, and he left home under the Buddha. So this is the little special account of Subhati. Eh? So any of you have this type of birth or not? Or similar type of experience in this type of birth? Huh? Got anybody or not? Huh? Born empty, then suddenly the wealth come back. Subhati arose from his seat in the assembly, from among the thousands of millions of billions of men and God in the assembly. Subhati got up from his seat. You know why it's mentioned thousands of millions of billions of men and God or not? Huh? You think the assembly can hold so many people? Huh? Then what does it mean? Does it mean that the tax is wrong? Ah, the seen and the unseen. You don't know how many. Because with the arising of a Sammāsambuddha, the number of audience really beyond your wildest imagination. Yeah, later on as you meditate, you go through, you will know. Yeah. Because there was one incident during the early days of cultivation. It takes you through those rhymes, you know, where you can see all these special beings. Then when I was in the meditative state, while I was doing my lying down meditation, then I went into those state. Then it took me through those rhymes. So when that mind went through those rhymes, at first I didn't know what it was. Until I came out of it, then I recollected. Then only I realized, no wonder it was like that. You remember, during the early days, especially Theravada, Sunday school teacher, or you from the Theravada tradition, you used to see this Buddhist book, colorful one, where they draw. They draw in the sky. A lot of these devas and non-human, they come in like group like that one. They draw like a lot of them. How many of you have seen that book, those books? During the early day, I thought, people draw. Then when I went through that rhyme, I saw how all these things happen. And initially, you start to see them moving, floating around. They are translucent. No physical form, but translucent. Very bright, beautiful colors. And that rhyme. It's just like during the Buddha's time, they show it to you. All of a sudden, suddenly from nowhere, so many of these beings come. Then you saw them all up there. Then they disperse also very fast. Oh, they're everywhere. Then I woke up. Later on, I reflected. I contemplated. Then I realized, hey, what they draw is actually something that really happened. Oh, they're up there. It's like that. And a lot. When they come, from nowhere, they just appear a lot. Yeah. Then they disappear. So these are the description which people cannot understand. That's why it's written here, from among the thousands of million, means billion, thousands of million. 1,000 million is billion. Billions of men and God in the assembly. Subhati got up from his seat. He saw Sakyamuni Buddha sitting there in a state which can only be described as tas-tas, unmoving. This is suchness. That's why he is called the Tathagata, an expert in tatata, suchness. Completely and eternally bright, and he knew the Buddha was presenting the Dhamma of prajna wisdom. For in his daily routine, while walking, standing, sitting and lying down, Sakyamuni Buddha always taught real mark prajna, contemplative prajna, and literary prajna. You know what are these three wisdom or not? Yeah? What are these three wisdom? equivalent to the three types of wisdom that you find in the Theravada tradition. So real prajna is bhavana maya prajna. Then the contemplative prajna is chintamaya prajna, or wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the truth. The real prajna is born of meditative bhavana. Then literary means through reading, through listening. So that one is the first turning, suttamaya prajna. The wonderful door of prajna can only be entered by means of wisdom. This one you have to remember. Nothing liberates the mind, nothing frees the mind except prajna, wisdom. Not all the energy field, not all the psychic, all this. To Krishnamurti is like paper tiger. They are nothing. But only prajna, wisdom, can liberate the mind, can transform living being, can develop the wisdom and realize the cessation of form and mind, leading to realization of nibbana. So this one is very important. I read again. The wonderful door of prajna can only be entered by means of wisdom. Subhati's wisdom, blessing, and virtue were complete. And so he understood that the Buddha was teaching the Dhamma door of real prajna. For that reason, he arose from his seat in the assembly and uncovered his right shoulder. According to Indian tradition or custom, uncovering the right shoulder was a gesture of utmost respect. And Chinese monk, honoring the custom, left the right shoulder bare in the adaptation of the Indian robe. Yeah. That's why you see the monks, Theravada tradition, their robe, their shoulder on the left is not covered with robe. So that is a sign of respect. Sorry, on their right. The shoulder on their right. So this is their custom or belief at that time. So their tradition is to honor wise and noble beings with the utmost respect. The Chinese modified the robe slightly in other respect. However, using shades of dark brown with the 5- and 7-piece robe, rather than the saffron robe worn by the Sangha of India, Thailand, Burma, and Ceylon. Also, since the climate of China is colder than that of India, monks need additional clothing under their robes for added warmth. But with the robe not directly against their skin, they were not aware if it comes loose. Patriya Bodhidharma therefore designed a clasp on the left shoulder to secure the rope, and the clasp became a standard part of Chinese rope design. That's why the Chinese rope, you remember, there is something where you can like button on. There is the clasp. So the Theravada tradition or from India one, there is nothing to hold on. They just wrap the rope around and they like turn. I used to see my teacher Achayantra, he just turn that one. Turn, then he put it underneath the arm there. That's how they become mindful. Then they just walk around. It is just like a sarong, but they know how to wrap it around. So these are the story behind how China, when Buddhism came to China, how they evolved, and how even the robe design was different. Then we continue. Subhati uncovered his right shoulder, placed his right knee on the ground, put his palm together with respect, and said to the Buddha. So this one is very important. The ritual performed in requesting Dhamma symbolizes the purity of the three karmas. Uncovering the right shoulder and placing the right knee on the ground represent the purity of bodily karma. Then placing the palm together respectfully represent pure mind karma. So this is something that you learn from Mahayana tradition. Then verbalizing the request indicates the karma of speech is pure. So this is how the understanding come about. Then the sutta continue, how rare world honored one is the Tathagata who remembers and protects all bodhisattva and causes them to be well endowed. The rare occurrence Subhati refer to is the appearance of a Sammasambuddha, a world honored one. Sakyamuni Buddha has arranged his seat and sat down without saying a word. Was Subhati making something out of nothing, making wave where there was no wind, setting up wrong where there had not even been a right, placing a head on top of a head, adding a mark to a mark? Was he just looking for trouble? If the Buddha has spoken a principle or make a sign, it might have made sense to respond. So how rare, world honored one. But all Sakyamuni has done was arrange his seat and sat down. This passage merits very special attention, for the main point of the Vajra Sutta is right here. By the time Sakyamuni Buddha has arranged his seat and sat down, he had already finished teaching Dhamma. That is why Subhati uttered his word of praise. For Sakyamuni Buddha had taught the prajna of real mark, which is apart from the mark of the spoken words, apart from the mark of the written word, apart from the mark of the conditioned mind, apart from each and every mark. Only sages who have certified to the fruits understood. Common people were not up to it. Realizing that Subhati hoped Sakyamuni Buddha would speak a provisional teaching, an expedient teaching of literary prajna for the sake of living being. That is why he prefaced his request for Dhamma by saying, how rare is the world honored one. Truly rare is the Tathagata, rare is there a world honored one. The real mark prajna is a protection and an endowment from all bodhisattva. The Dhamma is extremely wonderful. So these are the explanation. World honored one, if a good man or good woman resolve his mind on Anuttara Sanyat Sambohi, how should he dwell? How should he subdue his mind? You understand the question or not? Yeah? This is a question Subhati posed to Sakyamuni Buddha to teach. World-honored one is the Buddha, Sakyamuni. He said, if a good man and a good woman, means real cultivator, sincere cultivator, resolve his mind on Anuttara Samyut Sambohi. What is that? What is Anuttara Sanyat Sambohi? This one is from the nine great virtues. To be a Sammasambuddha means when you develop the resolve to walk the path of Bodhisattva to be a Sammasambuddha. How should he dwell and how should he train his mind or subdue his mind? So this is a very important question. So let's see what Shenhua's commentary said. Since Subhati was requesting Dhamma on behalf of living being, he repeated his address to the world honored one. Sakyamuni Buddha, world honored one, he said, you have already taught real mark prajna, but most living being have not understood clearly recognize it. Please, world honored one, teach it once again for living beings in the future Dhamma ending age. If men and women of good conduct resolve their mind on Anuttara Samyat Sambohi. Here the explanation of this word Anuttara Samyat Sambohi. It's a Sanskrit word which means unsurpassed, proper and equal right enlightenment. The term is not translated because it is an honorific destination for the ultimate fruit of Buddhahood. Anuttara means unsurpassed. Samyat is translated as proper and equal. And Sambohi means the proper or right enlightenment. So this is the meaning. Right enlightenment is testified to by those of the two vehicles, and it is what differentiates them from the common unenlightened people. The proper and equal enlightenment of the bodhisattvas differs from the right enlightenment of the two vehicles, in that those who have testified to an enlightenment equal to the Buddha's. It is, however, still not the unsurpassed enlightenment. Once they have testified to proper and equal enlightenment, Bodhisattva are called unsurpassed Lord. The Buddha is known as the unsurpassed Lord because there is nothing above them. The Dhamma Master of great virtue, who translated Sutta in the past, retained the original Sanskrit word of the Buddha's position, the Dhamma Master, who followed them, honored the decision in their own translation. So that's why they preserved the Pali words. Subhati asked the Buddha, if someone resolved his mind on Anuttara Samyat Sambohi, how should he dwell? Which means, how can he eternally dwell in his true mind? Now you understand, Those who attended the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, they will know. What did Hui Ning told this fifth patriarch when he met him for the first time? He tried to explain to him that he is undergoing a very strange transformation within himself. He said, prajna keep on arising, means wisdom keep on arising. And he is always with his self nature. So this question of, if you want to be a Sama Sambuddha, means you want to walk the Bodhisattva way, how should you dwell? The meaning is as written here, which means, how can you eternally dwell in the true mind? Means with your true nature, with your self nature. That's why ever mindful, ever heedful, understand? Constantly aware. That is how you should dwell, understand? And that is heedfulness. This is what the cultivation is all about. How you should dwell, ever mindful. Understand not? So this one is very important. He used the word eternally dwell in your true mind, your true nature. That's why not only connect, stabilize and constantly aware. And throughout the day, most of the time, you are aware within with that heedful mind. That is what the cultivation is all about. You cannot be heedful this way in the midst of life. Forget about meditation. You cannot penetrate at all. This is what really happens when you really progress throughout the day. You are more or less like no thought, nothing inside, fully aware. And the mind is like that, so different. And quite a number of our Kayanamita has that ability already. After they connect, after they develop the wisdom. So all this is the real cultivation of a sincere cultivator who has developed that understanding. Then the other one is how should he subdue his mind? Means how do they train their mind? How can he tame all the false thinking or heedless thought? Vain is no meaning one. Very proud type. Vain, vanity, vain. Vain thought or heedless thought. How can he subdue his evil roots of greed? How can he tame his anger, his hatred, enmity? How can he conquer his, they use the word stupidity. The actual word is delusion, self-delusion. This is what is meant by subducing the mind. The evil heart must be conquered, just as if one were fighting to win a war. So this part is very important. That's why for those who have the Dhamma, they will know how to ask the question, how should they dwell? Then how should they subdue their mind? Means how should they train their mind? So this one is really, really teaching you the real meditation, which is to meditate with understanding. And now we can maybe discuss this. This is very useful. How you should dwell, that one can only arise after you have cultivated the second part. The second part is how you should train your mind. Train your mind means what? They use the word subdue. Actually, subdue is not so accurate. I don't like to use that word. Subdue means what? Some form of control. Subdue means you force that mind not to do it. Understand? Means you overpower it, understand? Subduce it means can keep it under control. But that is not training. Sometimes you suppress also subduce, understand? Because that mind cannot react, cannot do anything. So if you go into samadhi, apana samadhi, or concentration, or jhana, then the mind is also subdued. The five hindrances is also subdued, understand? Because they are suppressed. It cannot arise. So subduce is not necessary the correct training. The more accurate word should be how to train your mind. So how to train your heedless thinking mind or mundane mind. Like a revision. How do you do this? How do you train this mind? This was what the meditation is all about. I've been sharing this for so many years in all the classes where we have meditation. So, how to train your heedless thinking mind so that this mind can be always mindful, aware, heedful within. This training is very important. What must you develop? Coming back to meditation, isn't it? So like just now, how you start? I say those who already know how to meditate, go ahead. Means you already trained. You don't have the hindrance anymore. Your spiritual faculty is already there. And you can be in a state of silence straight away. Or your anapanasati is already stable. You can be mindful of your breathing or any part within your kaya. Then only you can start meditating. But he has not trained means what? Means what? He has not trained your mind means what? Ah, you are still heedless, isn't it? So why are you heedless? What did the Buddha say? Huh? Why can't you be peaceful? Why are you not mindful throughout the day? What is the thing that hinders you, preventing you from having that mind state? Of course, there is thought. But what is the underlying cause? Because of mental? Hindrances. Because they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. Then you have to reflect. What are the hindrances that the Buddha mentioned? The first two is what? Sensual desire and ill will. Then you check, reflect, contemplate. Do I have sensual desire? Do I have ill will? Every moment of sense experience when I live life, do I get myself entangled with the sense experience? You reflect, you contemplate, then you check. You realize throughout the day, before you know the Dhamma, for some, even after they think they know the Dhamma, they are still doing that throughout the day. Yeah. Every moment of sense experience, what do you do? Yeah? You think a lot, isn't it? You react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And throughout the day, you got this like and dislike going on. Agree or not? Pleasant and unpleasant reaction to sense experience. You got your preference, understand not? Certain thing you like, certain thing you don't like. And if throughout the day you are doing that, what happens? Means you are creating mental hindrance every moment, every instant, every second. So if you do that, if you live your daily life that way, what will happen? All these reactions become like habitual tendency, understand? Means you develop it into a habit, no? Every time you see, you want to comment, you want to react, understand? Then every time like and dislike. That's why you got no peace, no? There is no equanimity inside you, no? Yeah. Every day also got things to comment on, to complain on, to react to one, not happy one, not peaceful one. See your husband also, not happy already. Then sometimes you angry yourself also. See your children. Then when things don't go your way, you again not happy. Then when you cannot get what you want, again you're not happy. Expectation not met, again you're not happy. When you confront the First Noble Truth reality of old age, sickness and death, again you become unhappy, miserable. Then when you cannot get what you want, separation in the form of like relationship failure or death or even forced separation, then sometimes it's career. You have problem during work when you are with people whom you don't like, career related problem. Then you are subject to a lot of work pressure, stress. And not only that, sometimes they harass you. They put fear in you. You meet bosses who are not easy to satisfy or work with. So they apply that type of very harsh and crude management technique. Management by fear and harassment. So when all these things happen, your mind state is always negative, unhappy. Then even when things go your way, what happens? You attach, you cling, you commit to memory and you want it repeated. When it's not repeated, or you want it to be young forever, or your loved one forever understand you, love you, remember your birthday. Or the, so when this thing don't come, your expectation not met, what happens? Again, you become unhappy. So this like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, this anger and craving and desire, positive and negative craving, they are like very common to living beings who are heedless. And they arise it every moment throughout the day. So if you continue to live life like that, it becomes habitual tendency. Then you become heedless, understand? That's why the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. You got no chance at all spiritually. And because you have developed such heedlessness until it becomes so habitual. So this hindrance of mind, sensual desire and ill will, they are the positive and negative craving that you arise throughout the day. So if throughout the day in your daily life you are not heedful, not mindful, you don't have the Dhamma, you don't have wisdom, you do not straighten your view, you don't have the five daily contemplative wisdom, the second turning wisdom born of reflection, contemplation and inquiry into the Four Noble Truths, you cannot cope with life. Mental hindrance will arise. That's why human beings find it so difficult to have peace. That's why you cannot meditate. You sit down only the thought comes. Why? Because this has become habitual. So heedlessness has become habitual. That's why they cannot meditate. And the Buddha's teaching is very clear. How to train your mind? Just like I told you once, when you know the hindrance are the one that cause you like that, what must you do? You don't go and deludedly fight the hindrance, understand? Don't control, don't suppress, don't fight. What must you do? Acknowledge them, understand them. Like in the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundation of mindfulness, after I read to you, the fourth foundation, Dhammanupassana. What is the first category of practice or cultivation? Mindfulness of what? Five mental hindrances. This is where you start, understand? And the Buddha say what? When the unarisen mental hindrance of sensual desire has arisen, what must you do? What must you do? You must be aware, isn't it? Correct or not? How many of you, if you are not a cultivator, are aware? You heedless until throughout the day you're doing that, also you don't know that you are heedless. So how to cultivate that first category of Dhammanupassana? Your own hindrance also you are not aware. The unarisen hindrance, when you are aware, then at least you can deal with it. Understand? Then you will know how to silence your mind. Then you will start to, what do? Investigate into it. Then you will start to understand how the unarisen hindrance come to be. Understand not? How they arise. How come every moment of sense experience you do that? Then retrospectively develop the understanding, reverse it. And then you straighten your view. So that the next time, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile feel or thing, you don't respond and react the same way. That is wrong view. That is delusion. Then when you have that understanding, then you realize, last time the unarisen hindrance come to be because of wrong view. Now with the right view, the unarisen hindrance cease to be. Then once you understand that, that is wisdom that liberates you. Then the third insight is what? The third understanding is what? The form and mind will come to know how in the future, how this hindrance will never arise again. Because you have understood how it arises, understand? Then when you develop the equanimity, the understanding, via straightening your view, you will come to know how they will not arise again in the future. That is what Satipatthana is all about. And how many of you do that? How many of you cultivate that way? And that one is not easy to do. That is the last foundation. That's why initially you have to establish sati, mindfulness, through what? Through kaya nupasana. That's why the first training is anapanasati. There are five or six categories of practice under kaya nupasana. First category is what? The Buddha said anapanasati. What is the purpose of anapanasati? To train your mind to be mindful, to be with the moment. The object of meditation is your in and out breath. When you are mindful of your in and out breath, you are with the moment without thought. That's how sati gets established. Then after you can be mindful already, means the hindrance are at bay already. You are not lost in thought. You are not heedless anymore. Then only you can move on to the second category of practice. Then that time you maintain this mindfulness in the four posture. Standing, aware. Not only breathing in, aware and all. Breathing out, aware and all. That one you do until like another routine. Then this alone is not enough. Yeah? This alone, you cannot live life. Then you have to develop the general mindfulness. First, anchor it to your body, the four posture, standing, aware, walking, aware, lying down, aware, sitting, aware. So when you are able to be aware of the four posture, then you have to be aware of the connecting movement. That's why looking forward, aware, bending, stretching, turning, aware. Answer nature's call, also aware. Putting on your clothing, the monk putting on the robe, also fully aware. Then whatever you do, all of your action and movement within present moment, you have to maintain awareness. Not until you have anchored it to your kaya, you will continue to be heedless. You will continue to think a lot. Because if you are not mindful, you will start thinking. I already explained to you many times that man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are aware with the moment to have the clarity to understand what is going on, or you are lost in thought. Lost in thought means what? Preoccupied your thinking, your sense experience, your reaction to what you see, to what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So when you are preoccupied with that, means what? You are lost in thought. Your whole of awareness or attention is already zooming into a thought. Then everything that you do inside the thought trap you. That's why you become heedless inside there. You are no longer aware. You cannot understand what is going on. You cannot see the truth and the reality of what is happening within the moment. You are no longer aware. That is the reason why you cannot meditate. You become heedless. So first thing first, to train your mind is to train the mind to have awareness, to have heedfulness. And the Buddha said you don't control, suppress and do anything to the hindrance. You only need to understand why you react that way and develop that type of hindrance. So that is wisdom, straightening your view. So in order to do that, you must have the spiritual faculty, understand? The Buddha said. That's why you must have mindfulness. But for mindfulness to come, what did the Buddha say? You must cultivate the first two spiritual faculty. That's why the five spiritual faculty or mental faculty, the moment you cultivate them, it will overcome the five mental hindrances. That's why you don't have to fight them. You don't have to control them. You don't have to suppress them. You don't have to do anything with them. You just do your puja, your religious routine. Chant, reflect, contemplate, understand who the Buddha is, then have faith in him and his teaching. Then from understanding who he is, how special he is, and how wonderful the teaching is, because it can bring about great transformation. It can transform you into an enlightened being, so that you can be free from all suffering. And if you are serious about life and that is what you want, otherwise you come to this world to suffer, you are not living life. You came to this world to develop all this delusion that will condition your suffering and misery. That's why you worry about life. You become miserable over life. You never live because you never understood life. So this teaching, this Dhamma that the Buddha taught, can transform you and develop that understanding for you so that you can liberate your mind and go beyond. So if that is what you want, then you have to determine seriously to train your mind to develop this ability to meditate so that you can have this teaching. So that's why this will give rise to virya, which is the second spiritual faculty, the spiritual zeal, or spiritual tenacity to cultivate, to walk this way. After you have the sadha, virya will come. then that will drive you to train your mind. Then you use your skillful means, like just now. Mind sweeping method combined with metta to decondition the heedless thinking. Then only the mind can become quiet. Then anchor it to anapanasati or any of the object of meditation so that you can stabilize the mindfulness. And the moment it's stabilized, then do the four posture. Then do all the daily mindfulness. That is how you train. Understand? Make this understood. Make sure you understand this so that every time you meditate, you understand this is what you're supposed to do. For those who have already done this, no problem, very easy. They already mindful throughout the day. They already have the second part. They are able to dwell in the way of satipatthana. Their mind is always with their true mind, the self nature. Understand? Like Huining, when he was born, he realized that. So training the mind to be aware is the first. Then stabilize it. Then use this to develop the daily mindfulness. Cultivate mindfulness of the four posture. Mindfulness of every action, every movement in the present moment. Then after you've done kaya, you will have the ability to be mindful throughout the day. Then you can feel many things. Then vedana nupassana is not a problem. Then when feeling, pure feeling, has become like or dislike or pleasant and unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling, you will be aware because of that kaya nupassana, the mindfulness. And you will be very sensitive. Any unhappiness, lack of peace, you will be aware. Then any of the defilement, you will be aware. Any of the hindrance, you will be aware. Then the second category of Dhamma and the Dhamma Nupassana is mindfulness of the five aggregate of form and mind. The arising of every aggregate of form and mind, you are aware. That's what Satipatthana is all about. If you cannot be aware of all this, you still don't know the cultivation. You still only talk about it in theory. When you don't even know what the five aggregate is, how can you be aware? That's why the Buddha under the Satipatthana Sutta mentioned, later on we got time, we go through, he said, this is form, task is form, task is the arising of form, task is the disappearing of form. How many of you can understand? Because the second category of practice, the Buddha just mentioned this in the sutta. Task is form. What is form also you don't know. That's why I teach you how to see form. How to see the unreality of form because condition arising. Then how do you know form? Through your perception, through your mental images. Then you start to see clearly what form is. Then how come form is unreal? Because it's condition arising, causal phenomena, impermanent. Then because of that, it is empty. That's why form ceases to have power over you. And then you not only can see form, the unreality of form, you can see beyond form. And then only you can see the mind. Then only you can go into Vedana Nupassana. Then only you can go into Chitta Nupassana. Then only Dhamma Nupassana. That's why the whole cultivation is not what people think. The whole thing is very different. Very, very different. So this one, very important, how to train your heedless mind or thinking mind. Or the Shenhua use the word how to subdue the monkey mind, that conditionalizing mind, the heedless mind with the avarice or greed, hatred and delusion and the hindrance. All this, they didn't expand on it because they don't understand the real essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach. You cannot connect to the five hindrance and the five spiritual faculty. You cannot connect to his teaching. Then you don't know how to train the mind. Then you think the method and the technique is very important. And you think that is meditation. And you become gullible. People tell you, oh, you're not rising, falling, that is vipassana. That's why you get trapped. You just follow without understanding. Then you keep on doing without understanding. People ask you to note, you note. People ask you to do this, you do this. But the basic essential understanding behind the whole teaching is not there. That's why this teaching, this understanding has been lost. That's why I've been repeating this, like how I repeat the Four Noble Truths earlier on, many times already. The Blue Book, all the transcript, they have this inside there. Even my talk on emptiness in Klang, all have this. So, have this understood, then work on this, and you are destined for enlightenment. The moment you are heedful, the Buddha said what? The heedful never die. And if you never die, means what? You are destined for enlightenment. That's why heedfulness is the path to the deathless. As opposed, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, but the heedless are as if dead. So you must determine to train your mind not to be heedless anymore, so that the hindrance are no longer there, so that you can be ever mindful throughout the day with the spiritual faculty, and you are in the moment, every moment, every instant throughout the day. Then only you can live life, then only you can cope with life, then only you can be heedful in the midst of life. And that is what the heedful never die. Even though it's simple, just train the mind to be heedful. Means ever mindful to develop the wisdom or cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. You understand very easy, but if you don't understand, very, very difficult. Because a lot of people get trapped in thought-based meditation. And when they don't know this, they keep on doing meditation without understanding. That's why they end up focusing, concentrating, developing jhana and all those things. Because they cannot control the mind. They want to control the mind. They want to fix the mind. They want to suppress the mind. So that they become peaceful, calm. Then they have clarity. It's like they enlighten. But there is a conditioned state. There is the mind that is in samadhi. But apana samadhi, absorption, one-pointedness, jhana, that one is not a free mind. You have to develop mindfulness, stabilize it until it is upacara samadhi, at the threshold before entering apana samadhi. That is the free mind. That is the mind where the hindrance are not suppressed. That is the mind that can allow you to see clearly how your mind, through wrong views, still react and arise the hindrance, arise the evil root. Then when you see it happening, then you know how you become deluded by it. How through wrong view, sakyadity, self-delusion, that greed, the selfishness, the lust, the craving, the desire, the emotional negativity, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, all this how they arise. Then when you know how they arise, you will know how to trace, retrospectively, trace the origination factor. It's through one of your senses, through your wrong view, you stir and you react. Then when you understand how it arises, you can retrospectively reverse this to an understanding. We are developing the type of understanding that can allow you to see things as they are and be at peace with every moment, every instant. Whatever the world is, whatever condition is, whatever the situation is. Then you will finally accord and flow. You will come to understand people are just the way they are. The world is the world. If inside, okay, you have the understanding, the Dhamma, the wisdom, then you can accept things as they are. You can accept what is. You can embrace what is. You can embrace the challenges of what is. And that is the real beauty. Then you are always at peace, no matter what happens. No matter what people say. You will not want to be right. You will not argue. You will just develop the understanding to be at peace with whatever that arises. Okay? Can follow, huh? So this one is most important. After you train this, then only you can develop the ability to dwell throughout the day in heedfulness, awareness. When you are aware of your self nature, your true mind, that is heedfulness. To develop wisdom, understanding. This side, the question is very unique and very powerful. Subhati asked what? In order to develop this wisdom to become Sammasambuddha, he asked the Buddha, how should one dwell and how should one train one's mind? That's why these two understandings are very, very important. But this sutta never teach you how to do, you know. He just tell you this is what you must do. So that's why last time in the introduction I said this is a very profound sutta. The sutta of no mark. No mark of a self. No mark of any Dhamma, understand? No mark of any living being to save. That's why he know you, he know me. Whatever that arises within the mind is a mark. That's why the Diamond Sutta starts with the mind must have no dwelling. Then later on, you must know how to use this mind, yet not be deluded by this mind. That is ultimate understanding. So this Diamond Sutta is very powerful, but it doesn't have Dhamma because it doesn't explain. It just tells you what this thing is. You must cultivate until no mark. Or what Subhati said, the real mark Dhamma means the real teaching. Then the other thing is, we see here, we read on to understand and develop the sharing by Master Xuan Hua, see how he explained. I also haven't read through this. So we read through. See how Xuan Hua mentioned. The second last paragraph, page 38. How does one conquer greed, hatred and delusion? One counter them with, see, this is a standard answer, where the textbook say, Sila, Samadhi and Panya. What is Sila, Samadhi and Panya? Morality, concentration and wisdom. But Samadhi is not concentration. Sila is morality, is correct. So, when you say this, it doesn't bring about much understanding in it. You cultivate Sila, Samadhi, Panya. As long as you cannot relate Sila, Samadhi and Panya to Noble Eightfold Path, you can never develop the understanding. That's why Sila, Samadhi and Panya is basically the Noble Eightfold Path. And Panya is wisdom, right view. That's why the four foundation of mindfulness accumulate with the last category of practice of the Dhammanupassana, which is mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths, which includes the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. But all this is summarized, didn't explain, because not many people understand. Very few cultivators understand. We read on. Greed, hatred and delusion are morality. Sorry. Greed, anger and stupidity are morality, concentration and wisdom, and vice versa, because they counter each of these. But actually it's not they counter. The three combine, finally you develop panya or wisdom. When wisdom is there, then only you root out these three. It is a matter how one uses them. For example, one can use money to buy marijuana and get high. Or you can use money to help someone, relieving someone else's suffering. It's a far better use of money than selfishly smoking marijuana. It is the same money. Only the use of it is different. That's why I always say, your thought and money is the same. It's not money is the source of all evil, it's the user of money. So likewise, as a human being, it's the user of thought. When the user of thought, this former mind does not have wisdom, thought becomes wrong thought. When the user of thought is virtuous, wise, thought becomes right thought, beautiful thought, wise thought. Then we go on. So it is with greed, hatred and delusion. Then Sila, Samadhi and Panya. When one understands how to use them, they are Sila, Samadhi and Panya. When one is so deluded that one cannot make them function, then they are greed, hatred and delusion. Ice does not differ from water, and water does not differ from ice. Just as water is ice and ice is water, so too affliction are bohi and bohi is affliction. Bohi and affliction are not two. If one cannot use it, bohi changes to affliction. If one can use it, affliction becomes bohi. So this is Xuan Hua's way of explanation. Huh? You go and find out whether you can learn much from it or not. To me, it's mainly theoretical. But he gave you some fairly good example. Huh? Then he used this poem. Huh? What is spoken is Dhamma. What is practiced is the way. Huh? This one is more meaningful. Huh? You talk only. Huh? You cannot do. So what is spoken is knowledge, Dhamma. But what is cultivated is the way. Even if you speak extremely well with no real practice, there is no understanding of the Dhamma. So one must actually go and do it. There's an urgency of cultivation, huh? The thought in clang. One must honestly, truly rely on the Buddha Dhamma and cultivate. Relentlessly cultivating sila, samadhi, and panya, and putting to rest greed, hatred, and delusion are the means to subdue the mind. It's not wrong, eh, that statement, but it didn't teach you, you realize or not? It didn't explain to you the essential Dhamma, why you become like that. When one subdues the false mind, see? The false mind, you have to subdue. Actually, not subdue, you have to train this mind until you understand, not deluded. The true mind eternally dwells as a matter of course. The eternally dwelling true mind, clear nature, bright substance, result from putting to rest the false mind, which allows the true mind to manifest. Now, this one is quite rightly phrased. You know what is false mind or not? Yeah? The Mandarin got a very funny word, you know? Wang xiang. Ta wang xiang. Those who know Mandarin, they know the word is false thinking, understand? No? The frivolous thinking. You heedlessly think, understand? Wang xiang, ta wang xiang. Means this one, all this thinking are frivolous, just thought, understand? No? No understanding, no Dhamma, ta wang xiang. So actually, this is a thinking mind, understand? This is a heedless mind. Conditioned arising mind, mundane mind. You remember? Every time I advise you to meditate, don't try to be mindful. Why? Who is trying to be mindful? The thought. And when the thought tries to be mindful, the thought is active, understand not? The thought is actively noting, thinking that noting is mindfulness. Rising, 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 falling, falling. Pain, 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 hearing, hearing. That is verbalization. As Krishnamurti say what? Verbalization dulls the mind. Create more thinking, more concept, more idea. Why must you do anything? Because the moment you are silent, you are already aware, you are already mindful. But because of the hindrance, you cannot be silent. That's why you become heedless. You think a lot. That's why you try to use this mundane mind, thinking mind, thought-based meditation to cultivate mindfulness. How can you do it? Thought must cease, understand not? The moment you are silent, you're already aware. Why must you try to be aware? Understand not? That's why train your mind to have the spiritual faculty. When sadha is there, what happens? The mind become very calm, very composed, because it has faith, it has confidence, it got no more doubt. No more doubt means what? No need to think, understand not? Silent, composed, calm, aware. Then when there is this virya, it's a spiritual tenacity, it's not an effort, no. A spiritual tenacity that understands this cultivation is very important. So it will give you that passion, the interest to develop the cultivation, then you won't be sleepy. That's why when virya is there, the hindrance of sleepiness, sloth and torpor is no more. Then the moment you silent means when you can develop the sati, mindfulness in and out breath, then four posture, then daily mindfulness until you throughout the day only aware, mindful, there is no thought. No thought means what? No fear, no worry, no anxiety, no sorrow, no lamentation. That's why your mind is peaceful. That's why there is no more restlessness of mind. Understand? Huh? That's how the spiritual faculty overcome the hindrance. Then when there is a sati, you realize you don't have to do anything. The moment this mind can become peaceful and silent without thought, you already aware. That's why mind supreme matter, when they decondition your heedless thinking without thought, you already aware. That's why you feel so peaceful. Then with metta, inner peace lead to inner well-being. Then you can meditate. And it's so simple. Then when you stabilize this, you will maintain this mind state after you come out of meditation. That's how you stabilize your daily mindfulness. That's how the Buddha said from anapanasati, you go into mindfulness of the four posture. That mindfulness of all your activity connecting the four posture. That's why sati sampajana. Not only mindful, but clear comprehension of everything that is going on within the moment. Then only you can go into the other kayanupassana practices. Then only you can understand the four elements, the 32 part and the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. Then only you can see your feeling. You can be with your 5 aggregate moment of feeling, moment of perception, moment of activity of mind, moment of stirring, moment of attention, moment of consciousness. You can be with it each and every moment within life itself, in the midst of life and nature. Without sati, no way. Without this heedfulness, no way. That's why the real meditation is just heedfulness, ever mindful. That's why the Buddha says, strive on with heedfulness. And very few people understand what heedfulness is. That's why they go and do all the funny meditation. I also cannot understand why. They go and do energy field, concentration, see light, see this, see that, then come out with various methods and technique and develop more concentration to control the mind, to suppress the mind, to develop the beautiful mind state. And all those get trapped in Surangama Sutta, the 50 deviant samadhi. That's how people cannot progress. People get entangled to not understanding the real teaching. Okay? So make sure this one is clearly understood. What's the time now? Ayo! Another 4 minutes. So we have to end. Okay, we end here. Page 39. The rest, you go back and read. So this, today's topic is very good. So at least now you understand the eternally dwelling true mind, clear nature, bright substance. So all of the teaching points towards the true mind. This is what Diamond Sutta is all about, Six Platform Sutta. That's why Hui Ning, when he hear this few stanza from this Diamond Sutta, he became greatly enlightened. Maybe next Tuesday class we go through the Heart Sutta note. It's mentioned how from the Diamond Sutta he developed the tie of enlightenment and wisdom. The first stanza that he heard for the first time in his life, the mind must have no dwelling, he straight away become enlightened. Then after that, the next one, when Fifth Patriarch explained to him about the self nature, the true nature, then he became so amazed, is it? How wonderful, how amazing is it? That the self nature is perfect and complete by itself. Then when he reached the point when the Fifth Patriarch told him, after you have understood what the self nature is, then you must know how to use this mundane mind, the condition arising mind, yet not to be deluded by it. Then he came to great awakening. Then he knew nothing is apart from the self nature, even the mundane mind, the condition arising mind, causal phenomenal mind, all this come from the self nature. Then he understands what the Buddha said, mind is a forerunner, all things mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. Oh, then he became so happy. He said, if only living beings can understand this, they can become Buddha too. When you understand, it's so simple. Huh? When you don't understand, kapala pusing. Because sati also don't know what is sati. So how to start the cultivation? How to develop all this understanding? That's why Mahayana teaching, when you understand, it's very powerful. Very, very powerful. But even Mahayana, very few understand. Yeah. Except the great teachers, the great master, the great bodhisattva, yeah, and the Buddhas. Yeah. So with this, we end. Eh? I rejoice. Eh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So this one, I hope to finish it off. Then I pass it for printing. Then maybe later, you all can read. Because this one describes the whole lot of four foundation of mindfulness cultivation. It's a final summary. The last chapter that I did before we continue with the Platform Sutta at Wu Ping Jing Se. So this one, the recording was very clear. Then those who attend, they were full of joy. Then Ingby straight away that day, after the class talk, he put up the hand and asked Brother Teo, can I volunteer to do the transcript? I said, Sadhu, you better go ahead. That's what I meant to be. Straight away the book came out. And I knew. Inside here also many things were mentioned. You read. Yeah, edited. Yeah, edited, all done. Four or five rounds already for with people. But you didn't send in any, yeah? I sent you the draft. Oh, okay. But I got send you the final copy there. No, the one before they print the hard copy for me to have a final proofreading. Just about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I think. You check and see. Yeah. You go back and check. Huh? If you don't receive, I will send it to you again. Huh? This one is very good. This one, there are a lot of things inside there. You all have to read through it or listen to the recording. That session was a very, very unique session. You know what happened that session? The bird was chirping like anything outside there. And so loud, you know, and for so long, you know, until it was recorded. You know. As we mentioned, then I say, the bird rejoicing, yeah, the bird also understand. A living being cannot understand, bird also understand, it must be a joke. Then after that, you know, it rained like anything, and the thunder was so loud, and it was recorded. You know. Then I said, not only you all want to listen, up there also want to listen. Because so many things happened that day. That 3 hour session. Until we cut short the meditation, or no meditation, we skip the meditation. But finally, we still have 15 minutes. Because we finished a bit early. So it was a very, very beautiful session that day. Meant to be, because that teaching wants to come out. Then they are waiting for the next two teachings. Platform Sutta and Diamond Sutta. And it was mentioned in this talk also. My nature can sense, and I already sort of predicted before the whole of this teaching start, that these two teaching is going to open up more understanding, and it's meant to be. Got time, I read to you a little bit. This part is very interesting. Okay, you listen. Today, it coincides with the consecration and opening ceremony of Aloka Stupa at Mitraville, the monastery of Reverend Mahinda in Kotak Kinabalu. If I'm not wrong, some of our Kaya Mitas or Dhamma friends had gone to Kodak Kinabalu to join in the celebration. It's an occasion to rejoice because that place is quite nicely built, and I think Sister Padmasuri and Brother Teo are there. I don't know about the rest. Just now, before we start, I mentioned about this book, the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. It will be the next book we are using after today's last Satipatthana class. As stated on the whiteboard, today will be our last Satipatthana class because we had covered almost all of the Satipatthana's four foundations of mindfulness, and we are left with a little bit more to go. The other thing that I need you all to understand is the condition behind all this. For our Tuesday class, we are going to start our Diamond Sutta class soon. They wanted it as soon as possible. This one you must thank Hui Rong. I don't know why they want it so urgently, what the reason was then. But now, I know. They actually wanted it to begin this Tuesday, 21st April 2015. This Diamond Sutta is a very unique and very powerful Mahayana Sutta. It's meant for great cultivators of the way, and the merits born of understanding and cultivating these suttas are limitless and beyond the comprehension of normal minds of living beings. There were many examples given in the sutta. The Buddha did mention, even if you were to offer the seven treasures, you know what are the seven treasures? Just now Subhati's family got to all the great Buddhas and great Bodhisattvas of all the 3,000 universe now, before, for many, many lives, all this merit still cannot compare to someone who had actually studied and cultivated the Diamond Sutta. See, you don't need to do all this offering and merits. You just study, understand, and cultivate this Diamond Sutta. Your blessing, merits, and parami far exceed all those 3,000 universal, not one universal. And they have offered this seven treasure to all the great Buddhas and great beings of this 3,000 universal. Their merit also cannot compare. Then if someone is able to understand just four lines or four stanzas of this sutta, the Diamond Sutta, and then able to teach living beings, the Buddha said, such merits far exceed all those merits mentioned above, because it's about cultivating wholesomeness and merits without mark. Now you listen. Without the mark of a self, without the mark of any concept or idea of Dhamma, it is very profound. It is indeed a very rare teaching, and very few people can teach such a sutta, as mentioned in one of the chapters. There are 32 chapters in the Diamond Sutta. They are all very profound and very beautiful. But there is no real teaching inside there. There is no real Dhamma inside there. It only tells you how to cultivate, the way you should cultivate. Diamond Sutta is very unique. It's the teaching of great beings. For those who walk the Bodhisattva way to become Sammasambuddhas, if you want to become Sammasambuddha, you must understand the Diamond Sutta. Then earlier on, Sister Lee had also wanted me to teach this sutta immediately after Satipatthana Sutta. But I told her I cannot agree to that because I cannot be teaching the same sutta in two different places at the same time. That is something my nature will never do. So I told her definitely not Diamond Sutta. Then condition just fall into place after that, because she suddenly managed to get hold of this book. This is a very important book, a Mahayana book. They call it the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, Liu Zhu Tan Jing. And this book has a lot of great teaching of Hui Ning, the Six Patriarch. Thus far, this is also one of the very great Mahayana Sutta that we can develop understanding. The Sutta has more Dhamma, and the Dhammas are very penetrative. They are all beyond mind. It looks like the Dhamma is going to take off again to another level after we start these two Sutta, that is the Diamond Sutta and the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. So today, like I promised, we will finish off the Satipatthana Sutta. Okay, where were we? At which page? Was it page 48? Yes, page 48. Then the whole sutta finish. You must read through this book, I tell you. It is a fantastic book. Yeah. And this is what you cannot find in other places. Yeah. What time, when are you leaving, Zhejai? Oh, in time to receive the book. I was sent for printing end of this month. Hopefully, we get it before you leave. Anyway, your parent will send it to you in UK. You can understand. It will benefit you a lot. So we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. We will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then you can make your aspiration. Sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata chobumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumodita chirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share this merit. And may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan. Sampe deva anumodantu sampati siddhya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired. And may all devas rejoice and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer all merits to departed ones and those who can receive them. Idang me nyatinang hotu sugita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them. And may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for our nation. Devo asatakalena. Sasa sampati heto cha, peto bhavatu loko cha, raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Okay, now we make the aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this marriage that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish but only the wise and the enlightened one until nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the great beings, worthy ones.